Name-calling. Name-calling is a problem that occurs frequently in households that have children. It also occurs in households that have adults, because people tend to call each other names. Not all bad names or horrible names, but we call each other negative labels, which really is the same sort of thing. Parents call their children lazy, or careless, or mean, or silly, or rude. Those are all names. Unpleasant names when you're on the receiving end of them. It feels like an insult. Well, it actually is an insult, even if it's true. When somebody calls you a name, it could be accurate. It could be very descriptive of you. But if that name isn't a pretty name, like you're smart, you're clever, you're beautiful, you're handsome, you're kind. You know, those are names also, but they're very positive names, very pleasant names that we don't mind being called. When we're called a negative name, the fact that it's true doesn't mean anything. It will always be hurtful. Kids actually call their parents names. Little children say to their parents, "You're mean, you're bad, bad mommy, bad daddy." You know, they'll say things like that. And when they're teenagers, some of those words will be even worse. You know, sometimes there'll be horrible words, swearing and really verbally abusive insults coming from enraged big kids or young adults. Kids call their siblings names. You know, they'll say things like, you know, "You're such an idiot, you're so stupid, what a loser." And again, it can be worse than that, but those names are pretty common even in households that generally use very respectful language. Somehow, children know how to call each other names. I don't know if they learn this in the schoolyard, in the classroom, or someplace. But they will come home and try it out on their siblings and get such a tremendous reaction that they'll continue doing it when they really want some power. They feel that they're in need of some power. And when kids call each other names, as we've actually discussed on the session on siblings, it can amount to something called sibling abuse. Of course, if parents are routinely calling their children names, that's a form of abuse as well. It's emotional abuse, verbal abuse, abuse of the child, because the parent is so powerful and the names are so diminishing and so hurtful. So negative labels really are problematic, affecting everybody. Even if a spouse calls his or her partner a name, and does so for 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 years living with them, calling them names, it is also a form of verbal abuse and can have strong effects even on an adult. So that if somebody is called stupid, let's say, for 20 or 30 years, well, maybe at first the person doesn't think so, but after so many years, even an adult will begin to wonder, maybe it's true, maybe I am that. You know, verbal abuse has been shown to have an effect on people, no matter how old they are, causing them to lose their feelings of self-esteem, self-worth, to have a drop in their self-concept, because we are susceptible to what others say to us. So parents who call their spouses names, right? So it's adult to adult, partner to partner. But when kids hear it, it's also a model that they're learning how to express frustration in a certain way. Now, kids also call non-family members names, so in their carpool, in the schoolyard. And, of course, your kids are victims of other children who call them names. And if the name-calling is bad enough, we call it bullying. So that really hurtful, insulting put-downs from other children and that are repetitive and that just won't stop no matter what's going on, then, you know, we call that a form of bullying. Name-calling hurts. The Torah point of view on this is that it's a definite prohibition. It's listed in the Torah as the prohibition. We're not allowed to hurt people's feelings with words. And the Torah tells us this directly, that using hurtful language is something that we're just not permitted to do, just the same way that we can't eat the meat of a pig. It's laid out there as clearly as that in the Torah. So we have to understand that we're made in the image of God, and every person is precious, every person is valuable and deserves respect because God made that person. So insulting one of God's products or creations, so to speak, is akin to insulting the Creator himself, heaven forbid. And we're to take this very, very seriously. We have to speak nicely to each other according to Judaism. Another problem, of course, with on the Jewish view of it, of calling people names, is that ugly words defile our own mouths, and we use these mouths to beseech God for help when we need help. So if somebody is ill, heaven forbid, or we're in financial crisis, or any of the things that can affect us in our frail human condition, where we turn to God and we pray with all our heart, those prayers are brought up from the heart, through the vocal cords, out the mouth. And King David, who wrote the book of Psalms, in Psalm 141, prays to God to help him keep his mouth pure, because it is the vessel through which his spiritual power is going to be demonstrated. So when David opens his mouth and prays to God, or sings songs of praises to God, or pours his heart out to God, he wants the vessel, the mouth, to be a pure vessel so that those prayers will be delivered properly instead of being drenched in mud, so to speak. So he asks God to please help him overcome the challenges that he might face in keeping his mouth clean, keeping it pure, pure of bad words, pure of insults, pure of hurtful words. This is the same prayer that we, or similar idea, that is, that we pray when we're praying the Amida, the blessing that we say three times a day. At the end of that blessing of the 18 prayers, there's a prayer for God to help us keep our mouths pure so that the mouth that we're praying with is not sullied. So it's like you're going to pour yourself a cup of water, you know, and you want a nice clean cup to pour that in rather than a cup that's drenching with filth, heaven forbid, right? So name-calling is something that sullies our own spiritual apparatus, our mouth. So we want to not be a name-caller. We want to help our children not be name callers, and let's just see how we're going to do all that. Okay. One of the things, well, when we're trying to help our children, there's always two steps. There's the model that we provide, and there's the specific teaching that we provide. So we have to demonstrate, and we have to teach. If you try teaching this without modeling it, you're not going to be very effective. So name-calling means, just to review what we said a moment ago, that your children should not hear you call your spouse names, even if your spouse has been careless or inconsiderate or thoughtless or selfish, even though these words may accurately describe your spouse's behavior, unfortunately. The idea is that you will not actually say those words to your partner. You could ask your partner to be more considerate. You could ask your partner to be more thoughtful, because the words considerate and thoughtful are good words, right? If your spouse keeps you waiting on a street corner when he says he's going to drive by and pick you up at such and such an intersection at 2 o'clock and it's raining outside and you're standing there with three kids and a little umbrella, you know, and you're standing there for 40 minutes, you might be tempted to say a few things to your spouse about, especially if this happens again and again and again, right? In your frustration, you might be tempted to use a few names to describe his behavior. I can't believe how inconsiderate you are. What do you think you're doing? You know, you think only about yourself. You know, we might say a whole bunch of, heaven forbid, nasty things. But it's okay for us to say, you know, I really need you to imagine my situation standing out there in the rain, and I need you to telephone me on the cell phone. I need you to be considerate of the condition that I'm in. And so we can correct a partner, but we cannot call a partner names. Just a side point, that when you call somebody names, whatever you wanted from them, you're not going to get. So we do it in frustration, but it's not an effective communication tool. It's not an effective marriage tool or an effective parenting tool, because it is so hurtful and turns people off so badly that it reduces their desire to cooperate with us. So that would be another reason, a practical reason, not to get into name calling with anybody, because we're not going to get what we want from them. And it's funny because, you know, we're tempted to call somebody names when we're so upset and we really need something from them badly. We need their behavior to change. And that's when we're likely to just, in an exasperation, call them a name. But that's the worst technique that we can be using if we want behavioral change from them, because they're going to lose all motivation to change their behavior for us. Instead, they'll be focusing on a few names in our direction, thinking what a horrible person we are that they don't want to have anything to do with. Okay, so the model that the child hears between you and your spouse. The model that the child hears between you and the child himself. So if the child has been running around and is totally wild, okay? If you tell the child, stop being wild, you're being wild, you're wild, okay? Any of those sentences contains the word wild, which is a label. The grammar doesn't matter, so if you tell a child, don't be rude, you are rude, what you said is rude. You know, we've discussed this again in other series on the relationship rule, I think, and in different places. We've discussed it before, but we have to repeat it here because these labels are a form of name-calling. And if you're willing to call your child rude or wild or noisy or silly, mean, rough, any of the words that you want to use, that may, again, be accurate descriptions, but they are name-calling. So we have to refrain from that. We could tell a child, I want you to speak to me politely, or even the label polite, which is a positive label. There's no problem with positive labels, okay? You need to be polite, you need to be quiet, you need to be calm, you need to be generous, you need to be tidy when you do your work, you need to be careful, you need to be more thoughtful, more responsible. Those words are okay, even though those are labels, those are positive labels. Name calling is the opposite one, right? Where you're so irresponsible, you know, you're immature. Those are all negative labels. Okay, so we've got the rule for parents. Don't call anyone a label ever, a negative label ever, okay? Use all the positive labels you want, but no negative labels. Now, what happens when the kids come home from school carrying all those new labels in their pocket and are ready to pull out because their siblings bother them? And, of course, the one of the best weapons you can use is calling a name, because it gets a real rise out of a sibling and gets the action going. So children will do this when they're stressed. And in order to get them not to do it, when I say stressed, I mean, let's say, one child was playing with a toy, the other one grabs it away. You know, the first one says, you're such a hog, let's say, all right? Screams at him, you know, give me that back, you're such a hog, or you're such a pig, or something like that. Very unpleasant language, very unacceptable. But the child has been stressed, right? The child's adrenaline is running, he is upset, he's outraged, and he's not thinking really clearly, so out comes his best weapon that he can come up with at the moment. He just calls a nasty name. And the other one usually will call a name back, and then they have, you know, the mudslinging begins. When you're going to help children stop doing that, you're really going to have to help them find a way to intervene with their own adrenaline, you know, to calm down and to problem solve, which is really hard to do. We adults cannot do it all the time. So there's a couple of slow methods. It's not fast. It's not like you can't just come in and stop this immediately. We need practice and training. And this is very similar to the relationship rule, which we learned earlier on in terms of training a child in the way the child can speak to the parent when the child is upset. The child's not allowed to be rude to a parent at any time, right? The child has to speak with respect to a parent all the time and to any adult. But the truth is, a child has to learn to speak to everybody that way, including siblings. And the challenge is always when the child is upset, when the child has been provoked. or the child feels attacked, any of those times, those are huge challenge times. Those are the times when name-calling occurs. It's very unlikely that a child would just walk by a sibling and just call names for no reason. If a child does that, he may have some other problems that need to be attended to. Same thing in the carpool or in the playground where children are calling each other's names. They're doing that because they feel attacked, provoked, bothered. They're kind of trying to get more power out of slinging heavy slurs at their friends. So what else can the child do when he's feeling powerless? That's something that we have to teach the child. And what can he do instead of resorting to name-calling? The best way to help kids find alternatives is the teaching method, similar again to the relationship rule. We start off at step one with talk about this at home. Rabbi Pliskin has a great book called The Power of Words. And this book has lots of examples of inappropriate, hurtful speech, which is forbidden by Judaism, forbidden by the Torah. And name-calling is just one type of forbidden speech, but it's there, and many other types as well. And it's a simple book to read at the dinner table with children, going through one type of hurtful speech at a time and discussing it with them. So talking about using a text, there's many new texts out also on hurtful words in general. But raising the subject of name-calling in particular with your children is the first step in teaching it, talking about it. Who calls you names? When do you call somebody names? Does mommy ever call you a name? Can you ever call mommy a name? What about daddy, etc.? And let the children actually share their experience of being called names and of wanting to call others names and of calling people names. Just let them talk about it. And teach them what the Torah tells us, okay? Teach them the way God feels about this and why God feels that way about it. The two reasons being, one, a spiritual reason, as we've discussed previously, in terms of the vessel for prayer being our mouth. And the other one, that it is very important to God that people treat each other kindly, that we are all children of the same Father, and that each person is part of Hashem himself, that we have to respect each person for that reason. So you can teach that to children at their own level. Then you have to teach them what to say when they're feeling provoked. Then you can do this with young children using role-playing puppets, dolls or bears or whatever you want, where you have one bear, let's say, come up and knock the other bear down just for fun. It's like a mean kid in the playground. And then you can have the victim bear say and do what you'd like your child to say and do if somebody badly provokes him. What should that bear be doing in this situation? The bear might say, for example, "Why did you do that?" Or "Leave me alone." The bear might be assertive, but there's no need for the bear to call the other bear names, right? And you can ask your children to collect realistic examples of things that happen to them at home and in the schoolyard, in the classroom, and to bring these examples, what things that happen to them and things that they see happen to other people when people are calling each other names. And work through those examples to see, well, what could the child have said instead? What could you have said in those circumstances instead? And this teaching part may take a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks even, as your family collects examples of times when name-calling occurred, either because somebody called them a name or because they had the urge to call somebody else a name and they acted on that urge, just to talk about those examples and to come up with alternatives, what we should do and what we shouldn't do. And if the child is too old for role-playing, let's say we're talking about, a 10 and a 14-year-old who are engaging in name-calling, and believe me, kids, 16 and 19 years old will also do that. So according to their age level, having this discussion, why did that happen right then? What else could have been said? Also to explain to children that name-calling is unattractive. Like it's yes, you've hurt somebody else, but everybody who has to listen to it in the background is also somewhat sullied by it. It ruins the atmosphere of the house. If you liked it, you wouldn't be trying to fix it here, but to be in a house where the kids are calling each other insults all day, it's aggravating to listen to. It's hurtful to live in such an atmosphere. It is not what we call shalom bayis. It's not a pleasant, peaceful home. So that you're being affected by it. It's like secondhand smoke. So the child thinks maybe he's just bothering one person, but really he's bothering the entire household who has to listen to that. So the same thing would be if you were the name caller, right? You'd be bothering the entire household. Every time there's conflict in a house, everybody who lives there is bothered by it. So you want to teach all of this during the teaching stage. And teach what you want your child to say instead. So let's say a sibling says to another one, get off the computer now. And the first one says, it's not my time yet. And the second one says, liar. Okay, you were supposed to get off 10 minutes ago. So it could be an accurate fact that the child who is not telling the truth is not telling the truth. That might be accurate. When you sit down with the kids, if you happen to walk by and hear that conversation, you could call all the parties in for a little discussion. And you could say during this teaching phase, if not then, I mean, it could be during your teaching time, which might be at dinner time or later that night. But you might say, you know, I overheard this conversation. And, you know, your brother told you that it wasn't his time yet. You thought that wasn't true and you called him a liar. What else could you have said? And hopefully somebody will come up with the idea. And if not, you will suggest it. They could have just said, that's not true. You told me you'd be off at 8 o'clock. It's 8 o'clock now and you're supposed to be off. Right? So it's not necessary to say you're a liar. And then we can discuss the fact that we feel like saying liar. We feel that way because of the anger. At that moment, the victim is experiencing a feeling of injustice, of being taken advantage of, being a victim. And that's causing an adrenaline rush in him. And that's why the strong, virulent, am I saying that right? No, whatever it is, unpleasant language is being emitted because it's coming with the energy of adrenaline, of the feeling of being attacked. What we want to do is help the child learn to put energy into his words without using nasty words. So it's totally okay to say, that is not true. Okay, it's all right to put some assertion and some energy, channel that energy of frustration, of victimization, of helplessness, of abuse, or whatever it is, into your tone of voice. But still use correct words. That's not true. You told me 8 o'clock and it's 8 o'clock. Okay? That would be a kosher way to say it. Now, after you've practiced many scenarios for as long as you feel you need to get the point across, the second step in stopping name calling would be to use something called emotional coaching, which we've also discussed earlier. If you overheard name calling, you could say, I imagine that you were very upset. You know, you came to get your computer time and he told you that it was his time and that must have been very upsetting. So as the parent, before you do any teaching, you're going to acknowledge the emotion. By acknowledging the emotion, you're helping the child to be ready to learn by discharging that emotion first. Once the feeling is named, you must have been frustrated, you must have been upset, you must have been angry, you know, whatever it is. When those are put into words, the words help the feeling just move out of the system to at least some extent. And that causes the child to be able to hear you when you get to the teaching part. If you just come right in with, oh, I heard you call him a name, and we've already discussed this, you needed to say something different, you know, the child will not yet be ready for your lesson. So he may reject it. It may just bounce off his forehead. It may just go like, well, you're also a mean parent who doesn't understand what's going on here. So you're not going to get the results that you want. When you go to correct your child, start off with naming the feeling first. Then ask the kids to repeat the scenario. Just ask them to redo the conversation, even though it doesn't make any sense right now because maybe right now it's dinner time. Nobody's on any computer, so nobody, you know, needs to this isn't really happening, but if you ask them to repeat it, it gives them a chance to create and build a neural pathway in their brain, especially if you happen to be passing by the children when they're in the middle of name-calling right at the moment. You can go through this exercise right away. Just ask him again, tell him again what the problem is. Okay, tell him you're not telling the truth. Okay, and just have the child say, you're not telling the truth. so that the child can begin to find a different way in his brain and build this neural pathway, which, you see, he already has a neural pathway for name calling. When a trigger is, when a button is pushed and that neural pathway is triggered, the name-calling thing is moves like lightning out of his brain and into his mouth, where we don't want it to be. So in order to build a competing neural pathway, he has to try it out. He has to practice it over and over. And, in fact, if you can put a reward in a little bit for a short time, right after the child has practiced building that neural pathway, the reward strengthens and expands the neural pathway. So, for example, as a parent, if you said something like, after the kid said, you're not telling the truth to his brother, then you said, that was excellent, okay? And thank you for doing the little practice routine. As a result of that, each of you can stay up 15 minutes later tonight, or whatever. Whatever little reward you can put in there, because the reward will expand and strengthen the new neural pathway. And we just use the reward a few times, not every time, maybe a few times in a row after we first start asking the child to practice something. Then, after we've gone through the step of teaching and then coaching them through it was the second step, to have them redo it and to practice and maybe reward it. After that's been going on for a number of weeks, then we can put in discipline. Because discipline is another way to blow up a neural pathway. So the old name-calling neural pathway works like this. A child is provoked. The name-calling pathway is triggered. It's a real literal package of cells in the brain. And that's that path is triggered. And then the child calls the name. So what we want here is provocation, trigger, which triggered the name-calling sequence, followed by punishment. And what happens to the brain is it becomes provocation, name-calling, punishment, provocation, name-calling, punishment. And soon the brain goes, provocation, punishment. No, I don't want that. So the name-calling road, so to speak, gets blown up, because the brain doesn't want to keep facing the punishment. In order to make this effective, you have to find an effective form of discipline, an effective punishment. Now, I don't want that punishment stage brought in until you've had at least a month working on the teaching and practicing and building the new neural pathway option. After that month, it may be unnecessary to move to a discipline model. But if after the month the child or children are still name-calling, then it's time to say, look, you know what you're supposed to be doing, what you're not supposed to be doing. We've explained it from every angle. We've practiced it. We've taught it. We've rehearsed it and so on. I see it still happening. So from now on, when I hear name calling, whoever has just called the name will have to do such and such. Now, a good such and such consequence for kids who are old enough to write things out, let's say 8 years old and older and 9 years old and older, would be to write something about the way they're supposed to talk. It could be lines. It could be write a page of lines saying, I need to find other ways to express my frustration, or I need to find kosher ways to express my frustration, or I can express my frustration in proper language, in respectful language. It could be anything you want. It could be a page of that. And then if the name calling is still happening after a week or two of that particular consequence, you can raise that to two pages or two sides, right, of lined paper. And use that for 3 weeks or so. And if the problem still exists, which is very unlikely to, but if it did, then you can raise it to three sides, because, you know, each one of these sides is going to take the child, 10 minutes or so, or 5 minutes, depending on how fast he writes, but it's annoying. And so that's why it's a good consequence. For younger children who would find the writing exercise much too laborious, you could just have them, you know, go stand against the wall for the number of minutes of their age. You know, when I hear name calling, you're going to have to go stand against the wall without sitting, without talking, without playing, you know, for 4 minutes until the buzzer goes off. And then, you know, after a week or two of that, if it hasn't been effective, you raise that up to 6 minutes. And then, if necessary, after a week or two of that, you can raise that up to 8 minutes. By increasing the time for the punishment, you'll see that the children eventually will stop name-calling. And I'm giving kind of worst-case scenarios here because if you pick effective forms of discipline, the name-calling will probably stop within a few days rather than a few weeks because nobody wants to suffer boredom, actually. Children don't want to be bored by standing against a wall. They don't want to be bored by writing out things. And, you know, if the kids are older, like older teenagers, instead of writing out lines, they could write out short essays, well, a page long, 2 pages long, 3 pages long, with, you know, if you want to get fancy, it can be with you know, quotations sourced out from psychology, Torah, literature, you know, find the reasons why name-calling is not good and strategies for overcoming it. It could be a whole creative thing. But you don't want somebody spending, you know, their life writing these things out. It should be about the number of minutes of their age, even if it's a writing assignment. So a 15-year-old wouldn't spend more than 15 minutes writing anything. These consequences are not cruel. They're just annoying, and they would help the child because they would help the child's brain refuse to go to name-calling because the brain itself sees that punishment coming. So, you know, listen to the lecture on the 2x rule in order to perfect your approach to this consequence thing, but that's what you could do. So here we have a program to stamp out name-calling in your home. It will definitely be effective. You can get on top of it if you want to, and it would be a good thing to do because it's a much more pleasant environment to live in that is free of name-calling.